Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's a drunken soiree in the within.
Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast.
Hello and welcome to Hardcore Listing Podcast. I'm the better half of your presenting duo. I am Stu Whiffin. Sitting next to me today, after having a big old slurp of his coffee, Christopher Willy Yum Yum Glasson. Hello.
I'm the better one. What are you going on about? What are you yapping on about?
I would like to comment on the photo of you at Margate Pride.
what one?
That your girlfriend put up. I mean, it looked like a spectacular day. Tell me what teenager you robbed for his outfit.
I needed to fit in. I felt like I didn't have anything pride suitable.
It looked
so
like
I went for a full ones like patterned up combination that you'd get in like ASOS or something like
that. Yeah, I see that. And I was like, I mean, you had the white socks pulled up as well.
I had the white socks pulled up. Yep. And wow. There's one photo. It looks like just a fan with a girl band because it was just me and like five lesbians and this weird hairy straight dude. And he's like, oh, well, we all know why you've come to Pride. Just to be creepy on everyone. Yeah, it was a great.
Old geezer dressed as a teenager, just like lurking around. Looks fucking well sinister.
Yeah, I mean that's really exactly what it was as well. So it was brilliant.
Well, look, before we introduce today's guest and get on with the show, we should just say some thanks to our sponsors.
Yeah, who do you want to give a back massage to first?
Samer Academy.
Go on.
So Simon at Samer Academy has been sponsoring us for a while now. He's a super duper gent and he also has a karate academy. So if you are looking for something to do, for something that's going to make you feel better physically and just as importantly mentally, then I can't tell you enough about the benefits of martial arts. I mean, I can't tell you about the benefits because I'm a wreck. But I can definitely tell you that if martial arts is something you want to get involved with, you will meet a wonderful gang of people and it will change your outlook on life. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And I'm saying that in the company of a black belt that retracted that last week, which I thought was quite interesting, on the understanding that it was only a matter of time before you and Renshi Simon, our sponsor, are gonna get it on.
I've never said I'm a black belt. I've never said I'm a six champion.
It's fucking ridiculous. Right, so if you want to get involved and you want to learn that and get involved in karate, essentially, there's all sorts of other martial arts training and self-defense stuff that Sai does. Where do they need to go?
Sama, SAMA-academy.co.uk.
Okay, who are you going to pull off next?
I'm going to pull Charles off, actually, if that's all right. Go for it. I haven't pulled him off in yonks. Charles, let's get together. Love beer, love-beer.co.uk. Charles is a purveyor and an expert of really the sort of beer market and independent brewers in the UK, but not that is what he always distributes to people. Love Beer's main sort of like business at the moment is setting up bars. So if you want a bar in your back garden, maybe you've got a garage, then Charles will come and do it. He can do it in a variety of styles. He's not like just a one sort of aesthetic pony. If you want it like high finish, then he can do that. If you want it a bit more rustic, like, you know, the styling that he did in the Whiffin, mm-hmm. with the crate, crate style beer pallets. Pumps, the pallets. Yeah, I mean he can do it all. So yeah, if you want that, and more people are getting those sort of things these days.
Absolutely, don't go down the pub. It's overrated. People are shit. Like, have your own bar in your own garden. You can dominate the music. We're doing research on this and carried out several surveys, and we can confirm it's the worst podcast that's ever been recorded. He's an actual idiot. The notorious FAT isn't much better. And yeah, I mean, don't go and listen to it. You'd be really wasting your time because you're not going to get anything from it. I heard a clip of this week's episode, and it was, they were talking about if you could have a robot at home. He wanted a droid. He said that because they're always so nice to you. I reckon if you pissed in your droid's face, it would still be nice to you.
Mm, yeah.
That's the level of drivel you're going to get on that podcast.
Because he didn't get the reaction he wanted when he did that to Lady P, did he? First thing in the morning.
No. So,
no.
Yeah, this is the guy that reckoned he was always an alpha male. He reckoned he grew pubes before he grew fingers.
In the womb. That's incredible.
That's the Big Papa J podcast. It's actually called the Say What podcast.
Say What?
With Big Papa J and Notorious FAT. Go check it out, obviously. I mean, you all know Big Papa J. He's sport enough of our podcast by now. And there's also a bundle of podcasts that he's done with us and with Pip that I've never seen the light of day because he talks utter shit and spoils everything.
He doesn't know how to when to stop. And also, but you do want to hear the theme tune of Say What podcast. It's really incredible. Good. So, yeah, go and check that out.
Yes. Shout out to 76 for doing that.
Oh.
Very, very good. Okay. Let's get on with today's episode.
Let's crack on.
Jay Ludgrove, how are you, mate?
Very well, gents. Very well indeed. Sitting here wetting myself, thinking about how you've got the pleasure of another Jay ruining another of your podcast today. So that's good times.
Love it. Love it, love it. Well, Jay, before we get on with your top five today, tell us a little bit about, obviously, how we got to meet each other and essentially because of what you do. So tell us about what you do.
I started a wee podcast probably 8 or 9 years ago called How to Write a Tune. Essentially, me and my business partner now, best mates, and we've been in bands since we were 17 or something like that. Ska punk, so as you can assume, you know, really popular because people love ska punk. We got to a point where both working silly jobs all the time, didn't get to see each other, and everyone in the band had things going on. So we started this podcast basically to see each other and hang out. But the idea is to have that conversation that you kind of had in the, I say green room, like we played places with green rooms, but during sound check, you'd be talking to the other musicians and like, how'd you write that, man? You'd have these, exactly, the toilet, yeah, where everyone's putting on their black eyeliner. So you'd have conversations there about how music's written and, you know, good chats, and it'd be really interesting. I'd also have the same question asked for me by the piss bloke at the end of the gig. Mate, how'd you write that? And I never thought that like the audience got to kind of see that conversation, which, you know, musicians talk about and get involved. So we had people on from all different walks of any kind of music. It was a real good run from battle rap to folk music, punk, heavy metal, like you name it, famous buskers, didn't care. I just wanted to know how people wrote and what the process they came up against. Off the back of that show, we were nominated for a podcast award because that was very easy 7 years ago. We didn't win because it's a fix, but whatever. popularity contest, you know what I mean? But I was kind of sat at that award ceremony. This is, you know, like I say, about 8 years ago now. And we're all wearing dicky bow ties and tuxes. And it was just like, oh, this podcast thing that we do in a shed. It's a real thing, this. Yeah. Like, this is a real thing. Huh. And there's like, you know, 300 people in a room and everyone's cheering and stuff about different shows. So from that day, essentially, what we started doing, Tony's the brains of the operation. I'm the mouth, as it's affectionately known. But we've helped podcasters to create shows. It's especially 7 or 8 years ago, there was quite a technical knowledge gap between just being able to make it happen. Like I can get a microphone and I can talk at it and we can have a conversation. That's sort of where my technical expertise ended. And 7 or 8 years ago, it wasn't quite as easy as just getting a podcast hosting platform. Pow! and it was everywhere, right? So what we did then was we bridged that gap for a lot of people and kind of made the price to play a little bit easier. So people who may not have been able to podcast, or businesses that couldn't have a podcast, we made it easy for them. And over the last 7 years, that sprawled into a far too overindulgent marketing agency, and we now create podcasts and video and design for people and businesses all over the world, which is, I gotta admit, been just the most fun of my life. Like, we've created podcasts with pastors, like wow, crazy American pastors who are like talking to their congregation like, okay, cool. Or agriculture, dentist podcasts. Oh, we had a good dentist podcast. Never knew
I've
that
been
was
looking
be a
for a good dentist podcast, to be honest with you.
Well, you talk to me after the show.
Just you.
So you know, that led me on to, then I started my own show called The Jaylee Show, because I'm a terrible egomaniac. And essentially the idea was to release a bit of content every day, which very quickly became untenable. So The Jaylee Show now is a podcast I run, and lovely Stu was good enough to come along, and we talked absolute drivel for an hour, one of the best shows I've had in a long time, and good enough to invite me over here to talk about my top five.
Absolutely. You spoke a high level of drivel, so we knew you'd be good company on this podcast. Jay, what's your top five today?
So my top five today is inspired by my business partner who just got back from Boomtown.
Right.
So my top five is top five festival experiences.
Lovely. Nice.
Lovely, lovely.
Now, I'm guessing you two have been to a festival or two.
Yeah. Yes, I love them. I don't go to them as much these days, Jake, which is quite sad. But yeah, absolutely. Some of the best times of my life absolutely have been at festivals. I think they just give you a much wider perspective, I think, on life and experiences once you go there, especially if you do the camping thing and just see all the just mad public just going crazy for all the music. Yeah, just the togetherness and stuff like that. You know, Sean, you cried at Coldplay once, didn't you?
No. You cried at Adele.
No, I cried at both.
Oh, right. So,
catch 22 there, Stu. Gotcha. Roasted the life out of you on that one.
Like, do you know what? I think I've been emotional at a Coldplay gig. I think I have. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, but your emotions were anger.
No, I ain't got an issue with the first couple of Coldplay albums. I really haven't.
Yeah. Me neither.
No, they're great.
Well, sort of. I mean, before we get onto it, have either of you used to watch the Woodstock 99?
Just recently.
Train wreck.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's insane, right?
It's insane. But and the thing I was watching it the whole time was that was my scene, not the burn things down and, you know, assault each other, but all of the music, every single one of those bands. Like, I was deep into Korn, Bizkit, like everyone who was playing then. I was just like that. And watching the whole thing, I was like, yeah, this is, you know, that lineup, that's not a peace and love lineup, man. That is a break stuff. Kick ass and take names.
It's so true, Jay. Like, I was worried. Like, I'm just relieved, because that was kind of our scene as well. You loved it as well. It was more my scene. Stu was a bit past it. But Jake, here's a question to you. Do you like honestly, would you have been one of those people standing at the top of like a burning pile of like? Because I just worry that I'm just glad I never went, because I'm not saying I definitely would, but I think there's a strong chance that...
I think it's a heavy chance. One of the best parts of that documentary for me, after seeing all this horrendousness happen, was at the very end, these people who have been kind of interviewed for the whole time were asked, how was it? All of them were like, yeah, best time I ever had. Like, you know, 20 years ago is the most incredible experience I ever had. And I'm pretty sure that a teenage Jay... with his big old jeans on, 5 to 7 chains, you know, maybe a cheeky bit of nail polish. I think he would have got swept up in mob mentality and would have been down a piece of steak.
Absolutely, dude. Like that mob mentality and then break stuff, which was ultimately... I've been into so many mosh pits where, like, I remember in Southend, me and Pippa had showed up at this club and they played break stuff straight away, and within like a couple of minutes, I'd think I'd fractured a rib. And like broken a finger, like not completely broken a finger, but it was cut and mangled. And I think I could have easily been one of those people. I'm not proud of it. I obviously would be. Absolutely ashamed of it now. But what would you? You wouldn't have done. You'd have been trying to calm everyone down, wouldn't you? And
I think by that point, like if I was in America at the time of Nu Metal, yeah. Which is a scene that I'm not a fan of.
So cool.
And that documentary hammers home the level of douche in America that was into that. It was just like, fuck yeah. It was just like absolute fucking idiots.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then that cunt Durst walks on stage and just makes it so much worse. Like, you know, do you know what's really tragic? The voice of reason is Bush. You know how bad shit's got when you're looking for answers from Gavin Rossdale. I just think, holy shit, that's in a bad place. And you've got Kid Rock and just like...
DMX was at that, was Woodstock 99, wasn't he? He was like, I think he must have been earlier on in the day, but he did quite a good gig. He was like triple platinum selling. He'd released like loads of wicked albums at that point. So having DMX during the day...
Yeah, he'll calm it down because he's not aggressive.
No, exactly. He's not been...
My name is Kid!
By then, I think I would have become a police officer. And do you know what?
I'd have arranged a mob and we'd have eaten you. And I'd have been wearing your rib cage as a hat.
If I had one rubber bullet left, I would take you out off the top of that fucking burning coach. Right in the fucking nuts with a rubber bullet.
We've derailed this straight into Woodstock 99. Sorry, Jay.
What's your number five, Jay?
So five, I'm going to start early. Five would be Glastonbury. And a couple of these on this list for me is Glastonbury. And one of the reasons for that is two types of festival in the UK, in my mind. There's the ones where you go in, you camp, and there's music all in one place. And then there's the other ones which feel like day festivals, even though they happen for 3 or 4 days, like Reading and Leeds, where you camp on the outside and every day you're kind of getting access to the venue. Glastonbury for me is just a village which kicks up for like 5, 6, 7 days, and for 3 of those days is mental. So my number five festival experience is being about 3 or 4 years old, and my wonderful mother takes me to Glastonbury. I was the only kid because she had a kid well young, so it was just her and her mates. They're like late 20s. And I had such a good time. Like, I still remember it now. It was just this colorful circus that kicked off everywhere. There was, you know, well, I learned later to be hippies, but there was just these really nice people, and they had like fire poi and sticks spinning around. But I remember coming out, and I think this is where my hatred of U2 may have started. But I think U2 were playing, and apparently I came out while everyone was sat around the campfire late at night. Apparently I came out my wee tent and said, like, "Mom, tell them to turn it down." But I remember it just being like such an incredible experience to, as you were saying, Chris, like, to all of the craziest people in the world have gone into one place and dialed up the crazy to 11. And that's what it's meant to be.
But
back then as well, it was such a different festival. Like, I remember seeing the change in the festival when, as soon as you had an orange refueling tent in like the late 90s, 2000s, and the whole place changed because you used to have festival friends, right? You wouldn't be able to find your friends.
Yeah.
So you camped and you were like, "Hey, do you mind if I turn my tent around and hang out with you guys?" And then those were like your total buds for 3 or 4 days. And that's what I just remember about it. Just this amazing community. It just set me up for a lifetime of being like, festivals are a really safe, wonderful place to be.
So when was that?
So it's got to be somewhere in the region of like 91.
Oh, wow.
No, I'm wrong. 98, 89, somewhere around there.
Wow. Nice.
That's so cool. I didn't do the music scene till like quite late. I don't think I went to my first gig till I was like 15, 16. So you were already like actually had been to the coolest place on earth, which was Glastonbury. Big props.
I know, right?
What was that first gig?
It's a high bar to start with.
Yeah, it is. My first gig was, I honestly think it was Bloodhound Gang. And it was good. And I met Ginny Popper Lee actually that day with Scroobius Pip. But he talked to him. I was just like, wow, starstruck.
I couldn't say anything.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. What's in at number four, Jay?
Number four is I'm going back to Glasgow, but I'm significantly older at this point. So at the age of about 12, my mother moved to the middle of Wales. Some people called it a valley. I'm pretty sure it was a ditch. We didn't get any TV signal, nothing. So all of a sudden I moved from like the middle of Greenwich in London in the and then now I'm living
that
in the middle
such
of
such a change of
Cal.
Life, man.
Yeah, deep. It was really different. Like the nearest town was 11 and a half miles away. And like I say, we lived in the bottom of this valley. So every month we would get care packages sent by all mum's friends, which would just be VHS of all of the TV, all the Star Trek from BBC Two, all the Simpsons and stuff. And that was, you know, that was our lifeline. So this weird little like a sudden island of solitude.
Wow. Had your mum murdered someone, Jay? Or something? Why
she has been on the run since the mid-90s, yeah. And no one will like that more than Moreg Pugh. A friend of mine was the son of someone who ran a circus called the Panic Circus, who were actually going to Glastonbury. And I'd heard that and I'd got the taste of it. So in Wales, back when I was 12, hitching was like a totally normal thing. Mm. You stick your thumb out and, you know, like I said, it's 11 miles to the nearest town. So you'd stick your thumb out and go. I'm quite headstrong and was back then as well. So I didn't tell my mum, but I packed a tent and a sleeping bag and bits and pieces. And I hitched to Glastonbury from Wales.
Wow.
And left a little note. And I was about, so I was 12 years old, left a little note on the side saying, "Mum gone to Glastonbury."
It's all she needs.
She's still
to
got. Oh, she's pissed. She's got it still. It's gone yellow and stuff. Like she was an unhappy lady, obviously. But I remember first day. So I've traveled from the morning. I've hitched and I've hitched and I've hitched. I've probably got to like the English border, which is quite a distance from Powys, Wales. About 2.5 hours. Worth
good effort.
Hitching. Yeah. Not bad, right? For a 12-year-old, just don't do things to me.
I was going
to
say, you stuck your thumb out and someone stuck their finger in on the way. But, you know, it's cheap
we're
ride.
A thumb out car here, okay? Thumb out. but I remember the sun starting to go down on a motorway. Thumb had been out for about 20 minutes, half hour. No one was picking up. And I was starting to get very, very scared and suddenly realized I was a 12-year-old who was going to have to camp on, you know, the verge next to like the M whatever.
This is like a rustic Home Alone.
Outside alone.
Home Alone 2 in New York. Yeah. but I can still see it now that as I was looking and as the sun was setting and just over the crest of a hill, I saw 5 vans in a row coming along. And as they pulled up, they had Panic Circus written on them. And I was just like, nah. And I had only been in Wales for 6 or 7 months. So I didn't know all the kids and stuff. And I was like, I'm sure Geraint, because people are called that in Wales, called Gez. I'm sure Gez said something about Panic Circus and stuff. And they literally pulled up to where I was stood, having half a little cry. Oh. And the door opened. I was 12, you know. Yeah. I'm on my own. I've made a massive mistake, Chris.
I've been pulling my eyes out.
Oh yeah, I was petrified. All of a sudden the sun's going down. I was like, this is terrible. I thought I'd be in Glastonbury. I thought I was gonna hitch and I'd be in Glastonbury like two-ish, you know what I mean? So but I remember seeing over the crest of the hill these 4 or 5 vans come up, my door opened, and there was Geraint and his hippie dad and two other great, you know, before people had beards, you know what I mean? Big old bearded people. It was like, Jay, where are you going? I'm like, Glastonbury. And they're like, oh, so are we, come in. Bam, I'm in Glastonbury that night. We got to stay in the performers' tent because they were performing in the kids' field. So I had this incredible, like, great toilets and shower, and there was food.
Wow.
Which was amazing. And I ran around like a dickhead and got exposure, which is like close to hypothermia, and managed to like then stay with one of these guys in a van which had a stove in it. And it was just like, again, this ridiculous community which I just kind of stumbled across. But the amazing thing was on the first day, do you remember the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
I'm familiar. I had a club, but it was just me and my mate was the only ones in this Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle club. And we split up all the characters between each other.
I was about 35 when they come out.
God, you look good for it.
Stu's in the club.
So I was always a huge fan of Donatello and his stick twiddling. Mm-hmm. That was always my thing. So they said to me on the first day.
Sorry, like, did you have that prop queued up for that line?
That's right, guys. I hold a drumstick just in case. Or my thinking stick is known in the office. So they said to me on the first day, was like, can you do anything? Can you walk on stilts? No. What kind of question is that? Maybe. No. And they were like, okay, can you do like, you know, poi, spin the things? And no, how about a stick? And I was like, I can spin a stick. And they're like, really? And I was like, yeah, spinning the stick round. So the first day that we'd been there, they were like, cool, you can actually do that. We'll do fire stick at the end of the day. And I was like, okay. So God bless the the mid-90s health and safety from this circus owners. So they just gave me a fire stick. I'm 12 years old, giving it the whole...
Oh, that's incredible.
At nights, kind of, you know, working for my supper. And yeah, brilliant. Basically joined the circus the second time.
Joe, that's absolutely insane.
That's incredible. Also, the fact that when you got home, you know, your mum was surprised to see you, but you had no eyebrows or eyelashes.
On one side.
Yeah. Half your face had been melted.
Well, you got to think as well, I couldn't call her. There's no phones.
Yeah.
She just had to wait
it out.
There was
no mobiles.
I wonder who picked him up at the side of the road. Was it Jez or was it someone else where his day nearly went from bad to worse? But
because it's been 3 days and I still haven't heard from him.
Like. That is one hell of a story. It puts all my Glastonbury stories to shame now.
Yeah, that's the most wildest Glastonbury story I think I've ever heard.
I've run out of toilet roll.
From a 12-year-old.
Yeah. How old was you? 12? Wow. Okay, that triples it.
Is this something that you and your psychiatrist has concocted to cover up the fact that you just got put in a van and buggered for 3 days and then dropped home
by an entire circus?
The guy clans hanging out the back of
you. You were just crying your eyes out when
I worked for my supper. How did I work?
Crying your eyes out as five vans pulled up and then the door opened and the geezer saw you crying, started undoing his flyers as he said, "It ain't your day, is it?"
As they dropped me off, who did you see? That's right now.
Oh, God. That is one hell of a story.
That's
mate.
Incredible.
So something you reminded me of, Jay, I totally forgot about this mindset, but I used to have between like the first festival right through to my late 20s when I'd go, I get like festival fever. So I've got an alternate ego person called Craig, what we discovered in later life, that there's this version of me that comes out that's somewhat, not a complete maniac, but he's quite hedonistic.
Bit of a cunt.
And I think to be completely hedonistic, you've got to be a little bit selfish. I think if you're overly thinking about other people, you might not have as much fun. That's what I like to do, is just see humans as like inanimate objects, really, for like 4 or 5 days. But anyway, I get festival crazy. And by the time I'm setting up my tent, Jay, I don't know. It's like I've had about 800 packs of Skittles because I'm just like, this is it now. It's like full festival mode. I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to have the best time. I'm going to go and see all the bands I want. To be fair, I will like, sometimes I sacrifice a band. I'm not one person who just like leave the group and just go off. So I'm somewhat considerate, but I'm normally very high and like just having the time of my life. Do you get
the mess?
Absolutely. I am a wreck. Do you get festival? Do you ever get festival like hysteria, Stu?
No, I just get pissed and have a good time.
Pussy.
I get it from the minute I'm packing.
Yeah.
Because I pull out like the festival jumper, you know, one of those big old knitted hoodies with a thing and the double hand pockets at the front. Pull that out and I start picking out pieces of grass from whenever the last festival was. Yeah. I'm like, oh, hello. It's back and like, you know, try on a pair of trousers and be like, okay, that doesn't fit me. I should go to festivals more often. But I've got that like garb, same sort of thing. You stick on the alter ego of that guy who's going to be, you know, festive link the weekend. I also tend to go to Glastonbury from Tuesday to Tuesday.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Like I like to make the week of it, you know what I mean? because it's such a different experience. Yeah. And it started from going with that circus. Like I knew my local shopkeeper. Like I knew him about, oh, Dave, you know, good to see you, you know, walking around and seeing those bits. And then all of a sudden, like your little town that you're part of, and it's this tiny little community, it's really cool, just gets assaulted by like 600,000 people arrive for 3 days, destroy the place, and then they all shoot off, and you've got a couple of days to be like, phew, go well, Dave? And he's like, yeah, not bad, man. Last 3 days have been intense, but it's all right, you know?
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Incredible. Right. Number three, mate.
Let's do it. So number three, I'm going to leave Glastonbury for a minute, but God knows I'm going to come back. So number three is going to be wonderful Reading. So as I said beforehand, like for me, festivals are two different vibes, because it feels like when you're camping and watching, you know, and the music is all in one place, that everyone gets on the same vibe, right? The same sort of feel. We're all living in this kind of hellhole. We're all living in the foxhole and we're all kept up by the music. But when you're outside, it becomes a lot more tribal. Like there's little pockets of people's place. This is my area, this is yours, and then everyone's piling in to kind of the venue during the day. So circa about 2002 2004, we went to Reading. So Reading and Leeds Festival paired, and it was just the best music that I've seen. It was Incubus playing, but Incubus playing like a couple of years after they were famous, when they're starting to release Wish You Were Here, right? So all the kids loved them, but I'd loved them for a bit longer. And I have a vivid memory of stood in their crowd where we were all head and shoulders above the girls who were, you know, three, four, five years younger than us who were watching it. So the whole crowd is jumping, and our mates, we were literally passing beers to each
perfect
other.
View.
Just stood like little boys in the sea of people dancing around, being like, this is a great gig, man.
Girls like, just watch the whole losing thing. Their minds at Brandon, just like that.
Yeah,
that
exactly. And, you know, he took his
bastard.
Shirt off, they lost it. Yeah, whereas for us, they played something from Science, and we were like, bam, and we lost it.
That's probably my favourite nu metal record, that. Like, I just absolutely loved that. That was my conversion to nu metal being my favourite genre, probably, for a while.
Well, and it's basically, it's like Red Hot Chili Peppers, One Hot Minute, if you infuse some sort of new style into it. It's so random, and so like it's kind of badly recorded as well, which I really like. There's some awful bits where you're like, I don't know who produced this, but they fell asleep for a minute and went, and just turned everything up, like, you know. But it's so raw, and it's they're one of the bands where I can, you know, I've got three albums where I love it, and then you're like,
that's it. But I just don't listen now. Like, no offense to them, but bands move on, don't they? And that, but for me, those first few records are just like so good.
Yeah. But it was Prodigy, and Prodigy was just the best moment of a festival that I've ever seen, because I saw 60,000 people take pills at the same time. So they did. We were stood right at the back, and they had like little cinema screens all through it. So it was really well done. Because you know how usually by the time you're at the back, you're hearing beats a second and a half, 2 seconds later, right? See people go like, and then the crowd roars on the way back. In fact, I think they said it in that Woodstock documentary that Korn could see a wave as the sound hit them of people going crazy.
Mental. That's mad.
So we're right at the back, and they got these TV monitors, look like little cinema screens, like a home cinema screen sat. So there'd be a V of people sat in front of them, sat down, and then everyone else was standing up raving. But they did the opening to Smack My Bitch Up, and they elongated it. You know, that whole up. Right, it's over ages.
You boys nailed
ages.
That there, by the way.
Thank you very much. I've been practicing that since the 90s. Since Fatherland dropped in 96. But it went on far too long, right? It's just them all starting and it's just hype, hype, hype. And then as it hit, bam, big bit of lights and silhouetted. It was 60,000 bottles of water going in the air, right? I just literally saw it. Everyone was like, oh, wow, right? And just all at the same time, it looked like literally 60,000 people dropped, maybe their first or maybe their fifth. But all at the same time, and I just got to stand back and watch this then kick off half hour later of just everyone giving it all this business, so you know, the 90s dancing, and just to see 60,000 people do a shared thing, like a shared moment, all at the same time, have the idea of like, no, I'm gonna drop when it starts, right? Everyone had that idea, and incredible to watch. And they nailed it. And it was just all the great tunes from Fat of the Land, just one after the other. No mess, no stress. They were like, we've written new songs, but you don't want to hear them. Here's Firestarter. and the place goes crazy. And it was at that perfect little time when that had been out for what, like 5, 6, 7 years, something like that. But it was still just the shit. Yeah. Just the music at that festival for me was just incredible. It was also the first time I'd gone to a festival with a big group of friends. So I knew everyone. We were playing Tenacious D, I took guitars. We were playing Tenacious D's tribute on repeat constantly. Loads of girls, loads of boys, just brilliant, brilliant environment.
Wonderful. Yeah, that was a great era for Reading. That anywhere from like 96 up to like 2002, 2003. Absolutely. I saw Mogwai there 1 year. Was that the year Mogwai were there? I don't know. That era. But yeah, Reading was an absolute blast, and you talk about Prodigy. That was probably our boat. We've done a similar top five before, and probably our favourite like festival moment is Prodigy in 97. That's a V of all places, which became this even more commercial. By the 2000s, it was getting shitter and shitter. Like the cleaner the toilets got at V, the less fun it was.
That is absolutely the mark. That is the mark. It has to look like it's been there for a decade. and everyone's got dysentery for those 10 years. If it doesn't look like that, the festival's probably a little bit too commercial for my life.
The only highlight, I think we went to V in 2005, and one of my best mates, he was like, the music's shit and the crowd are a bit weird and they get upset when they get bumped into and there's like more people at the Bacardi Breezer tent. But I have had like 8 poos this weekend. He just kept going. He was like, it's so clean in there. I was like, I remember that very first year, I think it was 97 or 96, and I opened the fucking door to a cubicle and it was the first day and we were quite soon in there and there was already shit wiped up the wall in this cubicle. I was like, what? How has someone done this already?
I'm always intrigued because Reading's the festival that people like to moan about the most, insofar as lineups. And you said, Reading was great up until 2002, when theoretically you was too old to be going there. And I find it every year, and it really annoys me when people will post up the 1991 Reading lineup with Nirvana, 92 with Nirvana and probably Jane's Addiction and all of these incredible shoegaze bands, and I think Nick Cave was on there and Public Enemy were on there, and it's like it's an amazing lineup, right? But it was 1991, right? And it's like them people that are going, why are fucking some grime artist or something playing Reading, and it's like, because you're 48.
It's not for you.
It's not for you, yeah. mate. Yeah, like, yeah. do you know what? Go to the Shine Weekender and dance to the Sea Horses, mate, because enjoy that, because you don't want people that are in their late 40s and 50s yeah. at Reading.
They don't want you there.
It's for young people to lose their fucking minds and have the experiences that you've just spoke about. Yeah, and well it's said. Like, it's every year that fucking flyer gets posted and it's like, fuck, you know, who's seen who's playing at fucking Reading? And I just think, mate, even if all of them bands were playing Reading, you wouldn't go because you're old. Like, stop it. Let young people be young people and have a good time. Fucking hell.
It's true, though. I saw Bob Dylan, not only when I was a tiny kid, but I saw Bob Dylan I went to Glastonbury like 7 or 8 times between the age of 12 and 22, somewhere around there. And I would have been more, but they kept saying it was the last festival ever and shutting it down and then kicking it off again. But I saw Bob Dylan and he showed up. He wore all black. Stage was all black. He had a white cane. So I could see that occasionally. And he seemed like he genuinely didn't want to be there. And I'm a fan.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a fan. Like, I will throw on a Dylan record, regular, chill out to it. I'm a big fan of... I'm into it, right? But he just seemed like...
Was that Bob Dylan or Bruce Forsyth then?
It's actually a duet album, mate. Bobby's Bonus, they called it. That is a deep cut.
Oh,
that is
mate.
A deep cut. It's a Bruce Forsyth joke.
But it is. There is nothing worse than going to a gig to see an artist that. Because I think, like bands. I was watching an interview with. I was watching an interview with yesterday, and they were saying, like, you know, people want, like, bands to absolutely fucking put on the best show they can. And, you know, most people are on side, unless you're at Reading when Daphne and Celeste were going to go on stage. And, like, and in hindsight, you look back at that now, and that's no different from them douches at Woodstock. You just think, mate, that's fucking terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I threw a bottle at them.
Of course you did. Like,
I'm not that proud of it, but at that time I wasn't really thinking about it. It was Craig, wasn't it?
Like,
humans were flies to me. I was at a festival.
But when you think, like, thousands of people were throwing like bottles at 2 16-year-old
I know,
girls.
It's atrocious.
It's fucking mental.
Yeah, it is.
Like, but apart from that, I do think people want the best from the artists when they go and see them.
Absolutely.
And I think it's really fucking weird when you do go and watch a band that you love and they just don't want to fucking do
it. They phone it in.
And it's like...
Well, that's the thing. When I was watching that Woodstock 99, like, you know, I totally agree with you. Fred Durst came along, dickhead, and he just, you know, he made it 50 times worse. But it was his job.
That was the scene. Yeah.
It's
and he played a hell of a gig, right? Yeah. And everyone in that crowd was an angry young man. Like, we didn't have emo back then, right? We didn't know how to cry.
Yeah.
We were just angry young men. We didn't know what was going on, right? They gave us chains and told us to walk around with
it.
It's
so funny.
Mosh pits were, like, you know, they had circles in it where you would, like, all right, I'm going to go and get my leg broken. See you later.
Yeah.
Run in and get just absolutely thrown to pieces.
Insane, wasn't it? Mosh pits were incredible.
Like, Corn and Biscuit. Yeah, but that was literally their job, was to break stuff, and that was the why they were booked. Unfortunately, I think the problem is with Woodstock is that they weren't booked for that. Someone just went top 20, grabbed the top 5, bell them. That didn't actually know.
That's what they done.
Now the scene was pretty angry.
Yeah, they just chose all of the fucking.
Well, it's super aggressive. Yeah.
Big all selling bands.
Yeah. DMX. It's mad. But it's funny, Jay, because you say that. I mean, because the music manager put that forward in that documentary, didn't he? Like, their manager at the time said, look, they did what they were paid to do. And other artists would have gone a different way and gone, we need to tone it down. Fred didn't, and, you know...
Well, they can't play their acoustic song.
Exactly. You know, they...
It's just one of those days when you don't want to wake up. Like Richard Cheese.
And, like, it's funny, because when I saw it, like, I couldn't help but, like, I thought, oh, here we go. This is a car... I'm just about to watch what I know is a car crash. But when you see that, when you see the break stuff in that thing, and you know this is bad, there was still an element of me when I was watching it going, that's the maddest mosh pit in history. And like, there's a little bit of like, it's not, I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying those things can be independent of each other, that you can be impressed of the frenzy that you see that people can be pulled into by music and togetherness. And also the how awful and catastrophic that can also be. And it was just mad. Well, it was like for fucking sea.
Togetherness in music at festivals shouldn't be that togetherness.
But I can understand that. I can.
Like, people should go home after that kick. That's the problem.
Yeah, and like, there was.
Right, you should all be like, wow, I'm gonna go get on the train and like, oh wow, ah, like relax, not all be kept in that frenzy and then be like, cool.
Yeah.
That's the Red Hot Chili Peppers. You're going to play Fire now. Oh yeah, because I do have a candle. Brilliant.
Mosh pits so used to be the weird thing.
So bad.
Mosh pits used to be a positive experience though. Like, so, even the roughest mosh pits I've ever been in, you get the odd douche in there, and then the rest of the people. Yes, it looks like a catastrophic melee of violence, and to an extent it is. But it's not like no one's picking someone and then just. And absolutely come. Me and Pip used to find the person doing that and then we'd tag team them and cripple them. And and that's what we'd do. We'd just point them out and then we'd plan. We'd literally circle him and then just both tag team him. But for the main part, it was like, it was just this wonderful thing. When someone goes down in a mosh pit, people help them up. And even while you're all at the same time going mental. But I guess what happened there was it wasn't contained to the mosh pits, was it? It started becoming, they were destroying the environment. And it was also because the environment wasn't, they weren't being looked after in that environment in the first place, was it, according to this documentary? Like, you know, that.
Like the guy says in the documentary, kerosene, match, flame. Boom. Boom. There it goes.
Number two
for me is become controversial. Because of the artist.
Ooh.
No, it's not the artist that cannot be named from the new metal areas, but close to. Mm. So usually when I went to Glasgow, and yes, we're back at Glastonbury, I would go and I would stay, not necessarily like, you know, in front of the pyramid or anywhere near the music. Mm. I'd go and find somewhere near the green field or somewhere and then, you know, take the trip each day over 900 acres to the music I want to watch. But I was with a girlfriend and she told me I was wrong. So we stayed in kind of the pyramid stage was there and you can't camp and you've got all the audience. And I was one field over and there. So there's a hedge in the way and a wee opening. I woke up, opened my tent and I can see kind of the back of where the pyramid stage audience would stand, right? There's no camp in there. Looked up. I used to like taking a smoking robe. to there,
amazing.
A little pipe, nice pair of flip flops. Like, you know, as we said earlier, I really, really planned and got excited about my festival fever early on, right? Maybe a beret. I don't know, right? Depending on what the day was. Definitely a cravat, though, because I'm that sort of wanker when I'm at festivals. So woke up, got my stuff on, got my my bubbles pipe, and I can see a queue. And I was like, well, got to be something to eat or something at the back end of the pyramid stage. So strolled over there, walked up to the back, and it wasn't a queue. It was the back of Rolf Harris's crowd at 11 a.m. on a Saturday. And there was, again, it was full. So it's another 60,000 people doing Jake the Peg. And it was brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, it was brilliant. Yeah. It was absolutely great because it was such a feeling of nostalgia for everyone. Because that was Rolf Harris. That was the artist we used to grow up and see on the TV. And da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- really wonderful. 11 a.m. moment.
Incredible.
11 a.m. and 60,000 people had showed up.
It's
to see that nonce, right? Incredible. Absolutely amazing. And the fact that he even did the painting thing at one point, did the whole, like, he did the whole routine, everything you wanted from you'd ever seen from Rolf, he did, and people ate it up. And the reason that's probably top two is that that now is not a gig that you can tell people that you went to and had a wonderful experience, because it turns out he's not the lovely bloke we thought he was.
Yeah, yeah.
But what a weird experience to sit there. And essentially, it's like watching Art Attack, that bloke from Art Attack being on stage and everyone being like, hey, it's
just
you.
To clarify, I don't think U-Tree got hold of Neil Buchanan yet. I think he's still in the clear.
His catchphrase, try it yourself, any albums a lot darker.
Do you know what? The Rolf thing's like so fucking bleak, man. It's like, I met Rolf Harris twice. Once in my band, where we all dressed up in our band outfits, which was quite kind of odd because he was like a comedy band. And we've got a photo with Rolf in the middle of us, and it was my favourite photo for so long. I bumped into Rolf Harris on Oxford Street. I was wearing my Mac Lads t-shirt, which had the word twat in big letters across the chest. And literally, I just heard, twat. And I was like, who's laughing at my top? And I looked over and it was Rolf Harris. And I was like, oh my God. So I've got a photo of Rolf Harris pointing at me in a top that says the word twat on it in the early 90s. And and it's tainted now, obviously. But Two Little Boys is one of the most heartbreaking songs you will ever hear. And he was a fucking institution. I'm not bigging up Rolf Harris. I'm just kind of giving it some context.
Me neither. Let's get that very clear. Neither of us
know that at the time. No. He wasn't being advertised as like a singer, songwriter, artist, nonce. Like. And everyone was like, oh, it's fucking British. He's so good, isn't he?
What a CV.
Like, everyone just thought it was the first three. And it's like, you know, Dad would be like, listen to you sing Two Little Boys. I'd be like, that's brilliant. And now, like, then they go and do that to themselves. It's, yeah.
It wasn't really to himself. I think it was to others, that got him in a bit of a pickle.
Yeah, sorry. I make it sound like he's the victim. Like, no, but obviously not, yeah.
I mean, I think we all knew the writing was on the wall with Savile, but, like, fuck
yes,
me.
Definitely.
I mean, every person from my childhood, whether it's a knockout, fucking Rolf's Cartoon Club, or Jim Will Fix It, they're just fucking spoiled. Everything's spoiled.
I can always hear one of my mates' voices, not Rolf. I remember how distressed he was with it. He's like, not Rolf.
I know.
I'm sorry,
anything
mate.
But Rolf.
Fucking...
What a shame. Mate. But for years, that was my number one festival experience because I literally happened upon it, right? If it wasn't for the fact I thought people were queuing for ice cream or something, I wouldn't have walked over there. I could hear some music happening and hear a lot of cheering and stuff, but didn't really know it. But same thing, like Two Little Boys, 60,000 people. Mm. Did you think I would leave you? It was brilliant, right? They're proper sing-alongs, and they're like, at the time, they're ingrained in our knowledge. Like, everyone just knew them instinctively. For a long time, that was the great story. And like I say, unfortunately, a wee bit tainted now, but I was there, man. I was there.
Rolf Harris, why couldn't you have just been a nice bloke?
Yeah.
Like you seem to be.
Yeah. I know. Okay, in at number two, nonce-based.
Nonce-based morning music.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What's lost profits, isn't it, number one?
Hence the band who shall not be named. Sorry, right?
Dear, I didn't know. Do you know what? Shout out the rest of that band.
Yes, absolutely.
Shout out the rest of that band.
I'm sorry that you went through.
Because, fuck me, they should be enjoying their riches now from their fucking royalty checks that are never going to come because that fucker
fucking
spoiled it.
Yeah.
And that poor band that have had to suffer, not being allowed to talk about something that they done that was incredible because of the fucking work of that
super
cunt.
Talented, oh, well. Anyway.
We're getting really bogged down in the nonsense.
Yeah, let's get away.
I took us to a nonce place.
Let's get out of the nonce pit.
It's not usually where I want to go. Okay, so number one, right? So number one is definitely Glastonbury. Mm-hmm. And you guys are going to totally be with me on the music and the time. But I believe it was 96. England played, I'm not a football guy, somebody, and we won by many goals, which was exciting. So I was, and I'd got there, and basically I wanted to get to the front because Foo Fighters were playing that night.
Amazing.
So I'd worked my way slowly but surely to the front of the stage through Finley Quay when he had that album out.
Yeah.
One album.
Cracker. And it was did he? Oh, Finley. Well, I know why, because he's awful live. So it was such an upbeat album, right? It was this happy album. The sun is shining, weather is sweet, which is all really, really cool. And it was a sunny day and we're all like, perfect. Finley Quay's next. It's like weed smoke everywhere. We're going to have a great time. I think Finley was having a bad day that day because everything was in minor key. So it was like, sun is shining, weather is sweet, We were like, oh. Right, to the point where there was like at least 100 people giving it cheer up Finley cheer up Finley during songs, during the break of songs, but while I worked myself through the crowd, I saw Finley Quay, which was huge at the time. Then the football was on and we won by a bunch of things, and I've never experienced you know, that. It wasn't football fan, so it wasn't like that, like where people, if I go to a football game and everyone cheers, I'm usually like, oh, way! Was that good, was it? Whereas this was a bunch of music fans watching our country win. So it went absolutely crazy. Then the Lightning Seeds played.
Incredible.
Which was then amazing because it felt like it was definitely coming home. Oh, shit kicked off. And then finally Foo Fighters. So I've managed to get myself to the rail, right? This is an all-day experience. I have run out of water, filled those bottles and had to leave them behind throughout this day, right? I'm hungry, I'm tired, I've lost my beret, whole thing's going off. Finally got to the fence at the top and they start and it's monkey wrench and it's kicking and it's whammy everywhere. Absolutely amazing. So I'm at the front and I'm giving it, as a little kid. And the security guard goes, first song, security guard goes, you're right. And I'm like, I'm fucking amazing. And he's like, don't worry, son. And he grabs me and he pulls me out because he thinks I'm getting crushed. And he walks me to the edge and he sits me down outside the crowd. Right. And I'm sat in mud. After 6 or 7 hours of fighting my way to the front, this security guard was sure that this little kid was being crushed at the front of the thing.
The kid over there with a pipe, get him out.
He looks like he usually wears a beret.
Go and watch at the side of the stage with Rolf.
And literally, Rolf said that one. He's just played the gig of his life at 11 and he's been waiting all day. So before I knew it, I was sat.
With another boy. It's just a real boy.
Oh, this is a Nazi show, isn't
sorry,
it?
Sorry.
So I was sat with my back to the stage, like they're playing just over on my left, and I am on the periphery of the crowd, like where people are kind of milling around. And for 2 minutes beforehand, I was in the center on the rail about to watch the best gig ever. And we just sat there and I literally was in shock. I think I sat there for like 2 songs being like,
what's happening?
You okay? Yeah. yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, I'm fucking brilliant. And now I'm here. What? How has this happened? And the only thing that cheered me up was about 10 feet away. Funnily enough, there was another boy. It was a bloke sat who looked so upset and occasionally was having half a little cry to himself. So after I got over the shock, I was like, well, you know, screw it. Went and sat down, was like, cigarette. He was like, yeah, thanks, mate. And I was like, what's wrong? He's like, I can't go back to my tent. And I was like, all right. Okay, why? He's like, well, I met this bloke. I'm like, hello. And he said he could sell us some hash. And I was like, okay, cool. Good times. He's like, so everyone got money together. All of our last money. And they gave it to me. Went and saw him. Gave me this big brick. Burnt a bit off. Yep, that's hash. Thanks very much. And he was like, and look at it. And it was this great big block of plastic with the tiniest piece of hash pushed onto a corner.
No! Right?
And he was just sat there in the mud being like, I can't go back. They're going to kill me. Right? I mean, it was like a tenth of hash. Like just enough to make the smell if you burnt that exact spot.
I mean, that's a genius stroke.
Yeah.
I know, and at a festival where people were like, yeah, okay, thanks very much.
Gone, and never to be seen
and
again.
Never going to see you again as well. And this poor fella, and he was the only thing that cheered me up to be like, yeah, I was, yeah, no, my problem's not that bad. I saw some brilliant bands. I watched the football done. The Foo Fighters are killing it right now. Like,
this lad's on the run.
Can't have a drink. Yeah, we ended up going to a bar and sinking a bunch of pints, and I bought him a bunch of, because he had no money, right? So a bunch of pints, and when he was nicely liquored up, I was like, now go and see your friends and show me a nice block of plastic.
Oh, dear. That's a tough gig, isn't it?
Tough gig.
That must have. Right, so I was trying to find a way to slip this one in, Joe, but you mentioned Incubus the other day, earlier. We went to see him. We'd seen him at festivals and that, but we went to see him in London. I can't tell you where, but it was a big deal. And we were so excited to go and see him. And my best mate, he got to the front when they started. And we were doing things like crowd surfing. It was still that era where we loved doing all that shit. And then I lost him. And we were always like, after crowd surfing, come back to this part of the audience in the middle, facing them back 10 metres back. Something like that. That was usually how we got back together. All gig, didn't see him. Got out the front at the end of the night. Obviously, didn't have like mobile phones really at that point, and there he is waiting outside. I'm like, what happened to you, mate? He's like, well, I got down to the front because I wanted to watch him, so I was at the railing, and then I just threw up all over myself. He said, I just threw up all over myself, and they dragged me out. They were obviously really annoyed. I was covered in sick, and I was like, can I have a nap? Can anyone help me here? And he said, this geezer gave him one serviette, like that square of serviette, and then they evicted him from the building. It's like, wow. Oh, can you imagine that? Like, he'd heard about two songs before Ralph in Everywhere.
My behaviour at that V97, I was selling like Skittles as calling them Yellow Bentines, because at the time Brass Eye happened. And I was out of control at that festival.
Craig, yeah, this is Steve showing out now, isn't it?
But my favourite festival story, I must have told you this, was a couple of years later. I think it was might have been just before the millennium. I think it was Strokes and Pixies. And it was in the afternoon. Mr. Gels was there. And my guitarist, mild-mannered John, who's not mild-mannered, is a short man with, I'd probably say, little man syndrome when his buttons are pushed, and he's really handy as well. And we were all standing there in this crowd, and then all of a sudden you could hear this like sort of kerfuffle, and there was this guy that was out of control, just like running through the crowd, and he was pulling girls' hair from behind and pulling them over. It was really fucking bad. And he just like, everyone was sort of watching him, and then he's just like run up to Gel, who's got a pint in his hand, and he's just gone like, give me your fucking pint. Like, and Gel just went, what? And he tried to knock it out of his hand. And like, Gel was like, mate. And he went, like, I'll tell you what, he went, I'll give you my pint and I'll buy you a fucking pint if you knock someone else's pint out their hand for my amusement. And he went, ooze. And he went, him. and pointed at John, who's literally just standing there watching the Strokes. And then all of a sudden, this geezer just comes in from the side, smashes his pint out of his hand. John's hand is still there and now empty. He doesn't even look. He just says, I hope that's one of my friends, and I hope they've got another pint in their hand to put in this hand. And he turns around, and this geezer then just thrusts his face in his face, and he's just shouting at him, oh, my life, John beat the living shit out of this geezer in front of a crowd of people and girls that have been pulled over, and he'd been fucking winding everyone up. And there was people, when he was laying on the floor, just throwing drinks over him. He got his comeuppance. It was a proper bully beatdown.
Cathartic.
And a genius stroke from Jill. Not to have to do it himself, but just to go, I could probably do that, but I reckon my mate would do a better job and it'd be way more interesting.
Wow.
My old man of John, V99, I think it was. Glorious.
My old man of John.
Well.
Brilliant.
I guess that's took us up to the hour mark, which is great. Mm-hmm. Jay, it's always a fucking pleasure to chat with you, mate. So if people want to keep up to speed with the Jaily Show and everything else you're doing, where's the best place to keep up to speed with what you are doing?
So you can find me, Jay Ludgrove, JayLudgrove. And thankfully, not a name many people have. Google that. If we've done half a good job, you'll find us. The Jaily Show is where you get your podcasts, and YouTube, or you can search GL Pro UK, which is my company, which says a lot better, smarter, fantastic people releasing far more interesting stuff than this guy can talk about, because as you've just worked out, I don't know much, but I surround myself by the best. So you can find out tips on editing and creating content and such from following us there. Like I say, YouTube or anywhere else, if you search for me, you should find it.
Wonderful. Joe, we'll tag you in everything when this comes out, obviously, so
appreciate
people
it.
That haven't found you already can do so. Mate, thanks so much.
It's been
so much.
Really fun, Jay. Honestly, great fun. Absolutely. Can't believe your festival stories.
Don't
incredible.
Go anywhere. We're going to press stop. It's a drunken soiree in the within.
Chris and Stu present Our Core Listing, the podcast.